Hi, I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lin.
And we're Book Friends Forever.
We're childhood friends that grew up to be
a children's book editor
and an author and illustrator.
Welcome to Book Friends Forever. This is the sleep episode. Every week we catch up with each other's lives, talk about what's on our minds, and share with each other what we're grateful for.
And check out our website, bookfriendsforever.com. The website will include more detailed show notes as well as links to the episodes.
And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy our podcast, please tell a friend about it. And also, please consider joining our Patreon. We would love your support to keep this podcast going.
Yes, and we'd like to thank our new patrons, Mitch Cohen,
Julie Damerel,
Anne Lee,
Debbie Duncan,
and Sarah S.
Remember, we're asking for just $1 an episode, and you'll get a special notebook with art by Grace featuring a quote by my mother, "If it is to be, it is up to me."
And if you are already a patron, please make sure you message us your mailing address so that we can get you your notebook. I think I've messaged everyone, but I'm afraid I may have missed someone, so please contact us if I have missed you.
And if you are not a patron yet, you can join at patreon.com/bookfriendsforever1. That's the numeral 1. The link is in the show notes and on our webpage. So for today's episode, we are welcoming a special guest, an author that I have had the pleasure of working with, Emily X.R. Pan, author of The Astonishing Color of After. Welcome, Emily.
Welcome, Emily.
Thank you so much. Yay. I'm so excited.
Would you like to share your pronouns for our listeners?
Yeah, my pronouns are she, her.
So as you know, Grace and I, we always start our episodes by catching up on each other's lives. So Emily, we thought you could start us off. How have you been this past week?
I've been pretty good. I've been, you know, doing a lot of resting, restorative, gentle yoga, and getting in touch with the beginning stages of a creative project where I'm letting myself play with ideas. I have a few stories that I am working on, chipping away at, that will hopefully become full-length novels.
Mm-hmm.
So
exciting.
That's kind of, yeah.
That is exciting.
It's a process of percolating.
Nice. How about you, Grace? How have you been?
Good. You know, like, it's always that juggle of work-life balance and everything like that. So I've been really busy with painting this book. Like, it's going so slow, as usual. And I actually have a bunch of school visits, too, like virtual visits. So it's kind of like juggling that as well. But the most exciting thing that's happened is that I went running for the first time for, I guess it's been almost 2 years now.
Oh,
I think
wow.
Longtime listeners know, like, I used to run and then I had to stop because I hurt my knee. And then as part of my New Year's resolution, I decided I was going to try to start running again. And I've been doing physical therapy. And I've been doing physical therapy for about 2 months now. And then my physical therapist said, "I think it's time for you to try." So I went running for the first time, but it was I wouldn't say it was any grand running. It was like I was only allowed to like run for 1 minute and then walk for a minute, then run for 1 minute. And then, you know, like it was like a walk, run, walk, run. So it wasn't a very like zen experience or anything like that. But it was good because I was able to do it. And I was really, really winded, and my knee was super weak afterwards. Like I could tell, like, whenever I was walking afterwards, but it didn't hurt, and that was a really great sign. So it looks promising for the future.
That is promising. That's exciting.
But anyway, how have you been?
I've been good. I've been enjoying the snow. We had another snowstorm yesterday, and I should mention that we're recording this on Monday, February 8th, and it's supposed to snow more this week. So I love snow, so that's exciting. And I'm still super busy at work. I mentioned performance reviews, so I'm right in the middle of performance review time. So I did 2 performance reviews last week. I had my own performance review, and then
how did yours go?
I went well, you know. I'm a high performer. I have to say that that this year, though, it's been, you know, last year it was such a weird year with the pandemic. And so I think, as I've told my people, like, it's kind of a like, let's just look forward to this upcoming year and reset. So, you know, it's an exercise we have to go through, but I feel like you can't really judge too much by what happened performance-wise last year.
I'm kind of curious, you know, because, you know, I haven't had a real job where, like, there's performance reviews the way you talk about for, like, years and years. And Emily, have you held a corporate job before?
Yeah, I've held many, many corporate jobs.
Well, you were at Penguin.
Right, I was at Penguin. But before I was in publishing, I was working in the business world.
Ah.
So I've worked for a tech startup. I've worked for, like, doing marketing for a high-end Mediterranean foods merchant. And, yeah,
so performance what's the reviews. What's a typical pro and con at a performance review? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, I can give you an example. So our performance reviews, to be honest, my company keeps changing how we do them. But this year there's a section that's called past year challenges. So the employees fills out this section first, and they say, like, these were the things that I found challenging last year. So it could be, you know, like, deadlines. I found it just really hard to meet deadlines, and partially because of the pandemic, or this reason or that reason, you know. And so I can just then react to that and say, yes, it's true. Like, this was a challenge, and I'm glad you acknowledged it. You know, so I guess you can talk about the things that you found challenging about your job. That would be, I guess, the con, I guess, or the negative. And then the positive is, like, all your accomplishments. Emily, did you have that same experience?
Yeah, but I've also found that it really varies depending on the corporate culture. Like, performance reviews can serve such different purposes. At some companies, they might be genuinely about improving the team or improving, like, you know, an employee's understanding of where they sort of fit into things and how they're doing within the team goals or whatever. And at other companies, it sort of feels like it's almost like a measurement to determine who gets promoted when and how are, you know, how do the evaluations affect restructurings or like sometimes it feels almost like it's not as much about like, oh, here's how you improve. And sometimes it feels more like it's just the company trying to put numbers to people.
Yeah, that's,
as a way of tracking things.
That's what I suspected, the way you talk about it. And that's why I kind of feel like performance reviews would, like, they would stress me out a lot. And I think they would keep me up at night.
Wow, what a segue. So today's episode is all about sleep. So Grace and I feel like we've talked a lot about sleep on this podcast and some of our challenges with getting enough. So we thought we'd spend a whole episode on the topic. And, you know, we're thinking about whether there was a guest we could welcome. And I happen to know that Emily has a lot to say about sleep. And I think I know that she also struggles with sleep. So I asked Emily if she'd like to be a guest for this topic, and she said yes. So here we are. Emily, do you want to start us off? This is the first question. What is your relationship to sleep?
Yeah, what a complicated question. You know, my sleep cycles really vary depending on so many different things. If I'm going through like a really intense sort of hyper phase of creative productivity, I might sleep very little, but feel so, I quote unquote, energized by the work I'm doing that I almost feel like I don't need sleep. I put that in quotes because it's obviously like a cognitive trick. Like, obviously I need sleep, but my brain is so exhilarated and almost has gone into overdrive to the point that it is ignoring the fact that I need proper rest. So in those cases, I get really annoyed that I need to stop what I'm doing and sleep because I just want to power through whatever I'm working on, which is usually I'm writing a story or working on some big creative project when that happens. And then on the flip side, there are times when it feels like everything is kind of normal. I have a set pace to things. Like right now, I'm in this sort of lull at the moment where I have sleep maintenance insomnia, which means I can fall asleep, but I cannot stay asleep. And so I have been sleeping very few hours every night, and there's no rhyme or reason to... I mean, I'm sure there is reason for it, but I have not yet developed the mindfulness to understand why I'm currently struggling to sleep, because as you know, Alvina, I turned in my book recently. I am temporarily off deadline. I feel like it should be... I've been actively trying, as I mentioned earlier, to have a restorative period. So it feels like I should be sleeping great.
Yeah.
and so, you know, and there, I go through periods where I really resent this, this difficulty I have with sleeping. And then I also go through periods where my sleep is all out of control because I've just burned myself out and I'm so exhausted that I'll sleep for really long stretches one night and then the next night be completely unable to sleep and back and forth. My sleep is a hot mess. It's all over the place. What about you?
Yeah, my form of insomnia is similar to what you had mentioned of not being able to stay asleep. So, you know, but I also have trouble falling asleep sometimes. So it's a combination. But I think generally the pattern that I've been struggling with since I turned 30, and it's been the, you know, I'll eventually be able to fall asleep and then I'll wake up really early, whether it's like 3 or 4 or 5. But usually 4 is kind of that magic time when I'll wake up and just be like, I'm kind of awake but I'm really tired and I need more sleep, and just not being able to fall asleep and trying everything I can. And, you know, I think, and we'll talk about this later, but I've tried so many different things and it's hard. Yeah, I mean, I think my sleep is kind of a hot mess too. Maybe not as bad though. How about you, Grace? What is your relationship with sleep?
Well, this is so interesting because, you know, the way Emily was describing her sleep was kind of how I felt when I was in art school. Like, it was always like this mad, passionate, like kind of rush to create, and we would pull these all-nighters, and like it was such a thing where you like stayed up all night and you would work on your project and work and work and work and work, you know, until like 10 in the morning and until it was done or you collapsed. I remember those days in a fog, but vividly yet in a fog, like a vivid fog. And then truthfully, I feel like there's before child and after child, right? And before child, I really don't remember too much about my sleep. I think I had occasional bouts of insomnia and occasional, like, just because I think I was just a very high anxiety person. Mm-hmm. And then I had a child, and then things just went out the window for sleep. And then I would say in the last, I would say maybe, let's see, probably I would say in the last 4 years, 3 or 4 years, my sleep has become very regulated. And that's been on purpose. I've really tried to regulate it. And I have to say that I feel so much better. Even now, whenever I'm grumpy or really judgmental or people are really angry or something, I can usually trace it back to not getting enough sleep. I think in a way I produced more because I was sleeping less, but I would say the quality of what I was producing, like now with adequate sleep, I think the quality is much better. It's kind of what I've struggled with for a long time. It's like I'm so much slower now, but I also think what I do is so much better. One of the reasons why I really wanted to talk about sleep is because one of my favorite podcasts is The Happiness Lab. And one of the podcasts they did was a interview with Arianna Huffington, where she talked about her struggles with sleep and how in this modern world, we've kind of glorified not sleeping a lot, and how like it's almost like a badge of honor, like I only slept 2 hours last night, you know, and how we're like ooh, and that mm-hmm. sleeping so little means like wow, you're so great, you work so hard, you know. And like I kind of feel like that is a really that's a really bad way that we've become, you know, glorifying not sleeping a lot and being like the sleepless warrior is the better or stronger person. And I would really love to take away that myth.
It also goes back to just the toxic narratives that we've absorbed from capitalism and this idea that we need to be working nonstop all the time. That is how our worth is defined, is how much we output and how productive you are, right? I'm doing air quotes. You can't see them, but I'm doing air quotes around productive because I feel very much the same as you, Grace. When I was in my MFA program, I actually would intentionally begin writing at midnight and write as deep into the night as I could because I had a ton of anxiety and it felt like that badge of something that I was working so hard that I would spend all day thinking about my writing and then I would actually sit down to pound out the words around midnight and maybe stop around 5 a.m. and then pass out. And I was generating a ton of work. I was back before in the before days, what I think of as my pre professionally publishing days, when I was just writing and had no agent or anything, I was able to write a new novel and maybe about 12 drafts of it a year.
Wow.
But when I look at, yeah, Alvina knows that is not what my output looks like now. I'm much slower now. And I do sometimes resent how slow I am now because I'm like, wait, back in the before time, I could write so fast, but I 100% agree with you, Grace, that the better levels of sleep, the better quality of sleep that I'm getting now actually makes my work so much better, so much stronger, even though I'm working slower. But this idea of how fast or slow or how much we work is so much this idea that we've just absorbed from how we were raised. Like, it's kind of the culture.
Yeah,
right now.
It's kind of like you want to, like, one of the ways, especially as writers, but I think that's also not just as writers, I think it's as, like you said, the capitalist society. It's like, how much are you suffering is mm-hmm. kind of like how much you're worth. It's like, and one of the ways that we prove our suffering is by not letting ourselves sleep, you know, like we're suffering for the company by working so hard, you know, we're suffering for our art by working so hard that we're not going to allow ourselves to sleep, you know?
Right. It's that kind of the cliche of like, you know, when someone says, how are you doing? And everyone always says, I'm so busy, and which is true. But then it's also, you know, we do this on this podcast when we catch up on each other's lives. I feel like we both always say, how are you doing? So busy. But it's funny because I feel like my relationship to sleep has changed, you know, as I've gotten older. And as I think the more I struggle to sleep, the more I value sleep and the more I prioritize sleep and the more I wish I had more time to sleep. So, you know, I think in the past, in terms of productivity, everyone like looked at Oprah and like, Oprah only had to sleep 4 hours a night was that was the legend at least. And that was how, you know, she was able to get so much done. I remember asking David Levithan once how he did it all because, you know, he's a publisher and he is an editor and he edits so many books, but he also writes so much. And he told me he only slept 4 hours a night. So I thought, well, you know, some people don't need a lot of sleep and then they are productive and other people need more. And yeah, it didn't seem fair.
I kind of feel like those people have trained themselves into functioning on so little sleep. Like I kind of don't believe that scientifically, medically,
right,
it is good for like any human to only sleep 4 hours a night.
Yeah, I agree.
And,
I mean,
and I used to sleep from when I was working at Penguin, I typically would go to bed around midnight or 1 a.m. I would try to start going to bed around like 10, but generally would end up going to bed around 12 or 1 a.m. And then I would wake up at 5 o'clock to go do my yoga practice and write before I had to go into work. And I was also at the same time doing yoga teacher training. I was at the same time running my own magazine that I had founded and writing my books and trying to get them published and working this full-time job. And people would say to me, how do you do it? And I would be like, oh, well, you know, I don't sleep.
Yeah.
And then my last week at Penguin, I like finally was like, something's got to give. Like, this is unsustainable. My last week at Penguin, my body shut down.
Yeah.
I went to work one day and I couldn't eat anything. I couldn't drink anything. I was so nauseated. I felt like I was about to collapse. And even though it was my last week and I had a whole bunch of really important meetings to wrap things up, my boss was like, go home. And you're technically not supposed to take time off once you've given notice, which I'd given them like 7.5 weeks of notice that I was leaving. But that last week I had to take like 3.5 days off because I had a fever that my body couldn't kick. And it was clearly because I wasn't sleeping enough. And my body was like, if you're not going to sleep, we're going to shut you down and make you sleep.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I completely agree that not getting adequate sleep is really, really like dangerous for your long-term health. I mean, I've talked about my father on this podcast before, and he struggled with sleep his whole life. And I think he was a doctor, and so it started early when he was like you know how they make doctors do these crazy intern hours and stuff like that. Even back then, he was like taking sleeping pills to help him sleep because he was only allowed to sleep for like 3 hours and at certain times and stuff like that. And I think about how he was when I was younger, and I think about how he is now. You know, it really affected his personality because I feel like he really changed as a person, and I really chalk up a lot of that to his lack of sleep.
That's so sad. Mm. Well, I mean, I think, you know, how we've said that when, you know, we don't get enough sleep, we get cranky. I mean, yeah, if you imagine spread that over decades, you know, and what effect that would have on your body and your mind.
Yeah. So,
Well, with that said, maybe we should talk about some of the techniques we'd recommend for sleep, although it seems like maybe we don't have it figured out quite yet. but Emily, do you have any techniques that you recommend?
So I think the problem is that it's hard to have the discipline to consistently follow these. But when my therapist has been like, your homework for these next 2 weeks is to take all the steps for ideal sleep hygiene, it actually takes away my insomnia. Mm. And the rules that my therapist sets for me are, you can't do anything in bed except sleep. So I can't watch TV in bed. I can't be on my phone. I can't play games. She even doesn't want me reading in bed, which used to be the one rule I would break. But now I'm actually finding that I also am struggling to, I'm doing this thing where I'll wake up around 3 or 4 in the morning and be unable to sleep. So then I, you know, open a book and I try to read to soothe my mind. And then the moment I start to fall asleep and I put the book aside, I'm back to being fully awake. And I think the book has just become, for me, the tool that some people use when they keep the television on all night as a way to soothe them to sleep. But I don't have a television. I don't watch that much TV. So for me, it's reading. And I'm starting to realize, oh, this is what my therapist was talking about. And so she has always said, if you can't sleep, remove yourself from bed so that you don't associate the bed as being the place where you're struggling to sleep. Put yourself in a different room and like turn on a low light or something and read or do something very calming in that other room until you feel ready to sleep, and then return to bed. And an hour before bed, all screens off, no devices, all lights turned down low. It really helps me if I like really turn the lights down low and light candles like an hour before bed. That will soothe me to sleep. And I do not allow my phone to enter the bedroom. Mm. So I leave my phone behind.
In the podcast interview that I listened to, Arianna Huffington also suggests woo yourself to sleep. Like you get your silk pajamas and like, did your therapist suggest that?
She didn't, but I feel like that sounds ingenious. I'm the type of person who, my pajamas are just like ratty old t-shirts that have too many holes in them for me to wear out into the world. And I'm like, maybe sleeping would feel more enticing and relaxing if I bought myself luxurious pajamas.
Yeah, because she was saying how, I have not used this, used her suggestions, but it sounds similar to what you were saying. It's like, you give yourself the bubble bath and you give yourself, like, you kind of, like, seduce yourself to sleep with, like, the special silk pajamas and the, like, so it's kind of like, you know that this is the sleep place. So I thought that was really cute.
That's great.
I love that.
Grace, how about you? What recommendations do you have for sleeping?
So I have a pretty good relationship with sleep now, because like I said, I've been pretty good about regimenting it. And this is what works for me, because I wake up really early in the morning, mainly because I want to get a lot of work done. So I wake up at 4:30 in the morning, but to make sure that I feel refreshed, I go to sleep with my daughter, Hazel. We start at 8, and we are hopefully asleep by 9 or 9:30. I mean, we have a very long bedtime routine where we get ready and we read books and like all these things, and I tell her a story. And most of the time I fall asleep telling her a story and she's like, wake up, you didn't tell me the end. And so I think I've kind of trained my body now that like when I'm telling the story at like, and you know, the lights are dim and all these things, like I've trained myself like that's the time to go to bed. So And sometimes when I stay up late, I still wake up at 4:30 in the morning. Like, I've trained myself, like, that's the time to wake up now. So there are days when I try to sleep in because I'll go to bed late, but I'll still wake up really early. And that's when I realize, like, I'll be cranky all that day, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, that's why. So my technique is really just to have a set bedtime and a set wake-up time and just try to stick to that as much as possible. So, and that's really worked for me.
If you're sleep deprived, do you nap later in the day?
I've only done that once, and I did it. I remember looking it up, trying to make sure that I was doing it for, like, they said a sleep cycle. I can't remember how long. I think they say a sleep cycle is like 19 minutes or something like that. And I remember, like, you don't want to sleep over your sleep cycle, because if you try to wake up like in a sleep cycle and a half, you'll feel less refreshed. So I remember I tried it once and I slept for like the sleep cycle amount of time, and actually it did work, it really did. But like I do find that once I'm awake during the day, like there's just not time for a nap, so I just have to try to make it up later.
Yeah, I think so. For me, the techniques are kind of a combination of what you two have talked about already. One is definitely to have a routine, a bedtime routine. And so for me, when I found myself waking up early, I just realized, well, I just have to go to bed earlier in order to get, you know, the amount of sleep that I need. So, you know, I think my bedtime used to be around 11, and then that meant I'd be asleep by midnight. So then I started backing up till like going to bed by 10, which meant I'll be asleep by 11. And then nowadays I try to kind of start my routine around 9:30 so that I'm actually asleep by 10 or 10:30. And so then if I do wake up at 4:30 and I'm not able to fall back asleep, then at least I've gotten 6 hours and or however many hours that is. And I think something that someone told me this, gosh, maybe 20 or 30 years ago, that I always found comforting, was that even if you're not asleep, if you're resting, your body still gets so much benefit from that. You know, of course, not the full benefits of sleeping, but it made me feel like, okay, even if I can't fall back asleep, the fact that I'm resting and lying in bed and resting my body, I'm still getting some benefits from that. But I will also say I've tried so many different things. I mean, I've tried calm powder, magnesium, which actually a listener had suggested. I, you know, CBD or maybe even THC. For a while I was listening to the Sleep With Me podcast. Emily, you were saying like some people listen to the TV all, you know, as they sleep. I actually used to be that person where I would want, I don't know, I think it was just wanting to feel like you're not alone, is I would have the radio or TV or a podcast playing in the background, and that would help me sleep. I've tried meditation, I've tried like breathing and counting, and the thing that now I've just I have just in case is trazodone. I got a prescription for that. That was something that some of our friends had recommended. And it's, you know, it's technically anti-anxiety. And I think it's because my kind of insomnia is because my brain is just won't shut off. So, you know, if I just have something that just kind of calms it down so that I can fall asleep and relax, that's helpful. But I don't like relying on chemicals, I guess, if I can avoid it. Although I'm not, I'm definitely not against using it. So those are some of the things.
That's also how I feel about my anxiety's relationship to my sleep, is that the reason why I sort of resurface out of the ocean of sleep is that my brain has all these thoughts that sort of start to cycle around and around and around, and it just gradually pulls me up into consciousness. And then suddenly I'm awake at 3 or 4 in the morning thinking about some random conversation or thing I saw on the internet or whatever that isn't necessarily on its own anxiety inducing, but just for some reason is stuck in my brain on a loop.
Have you guys had those dreams lately about where you dream that you forgot to wear a mask?
I have not had that dream, but I've heard of so many people having that dream.
I've had 3 of those dreams in the last week, you know, where I'm just dreaming a regular dream, like I'm going to a restaurant or I'm interacting with a kid, and all of a sudden I'll realize, like, oh my gosh, I'm not wearing a mask. And sometimes that wakes me up.
What do you think is the thing that keeps you awake most often?
For me, it's always work. For sure.
I was trying to think about what it was for me, and I feel like it's not exactly so much work or social anxiety, but everything mixed in. It's just this feeling of inadequacy that'll keep me awake. You know, like I have to do more. I have to, like, there's something I need to do, and I have to do more. Like, and it could be work. It could be something else. It could be like something with parenting. Like, but it's like that emotion of like, I need to do something, you know, something more, right? Because there's something that I have that's not enough. And so that'll keep me up, like, and I have to go do it. Like, so that I think has been probably the thing that keeps me up.
I was going to say something very similar. Inadequacy is 100% the right word. And the feeling like I might be on the brink of failure.
Yes.
Oh, no.
I think everything ties back to that feeling.
Yeah.
Like all of my anxieties stem from that. And so if I'm anxious about something that feels unrelated, I know it is in some way related to that.
Yes, I have that. That completely is how it is for me too. Elvina, you don't have that, or do you have it? Do you think you have it?
No, I don't think I have that. Mine is just my to-do list and mostly work, kind of bubbling to the surface.
I wonder if it's a writer thing.
Yeah, I think it's maybe
that's
more
what
creative.
I forgot to mention, because you had mentioned trazodone, Alvina. I'm also kind of a hobbyist, aspiring herbalist. And so I oftentimes will take tinctures or teas that will help me sleep. And I highly recommend taking a tea that has lemon balm in it.
Oh.
It is extremely soothing. I grow lemon balm in my apartment, so I can just pluck some right off and make like a fresh tea from that, or even chew on some. But you can get teas, like there are sleepy time teas that have lavender and lemon balm and other plants that are known to be very, very calming, soothing. Like chamomile is another one that, you know, tends to be really good for that. And it just like really brings you right down and can make it easier to fall asleep if you're struggling with falling asleep.
Oh, yeah, that reminds me. I have also used some essential oils with lavender mainly, or other, like lavender actually does help something about that smell. And also, yeah, in teas is really nice.
I wanted to touch back a little bit about like when Emily was asking me about naps, and I was thinking about how like why don't I take more naps, and you know, and that actually went back to what I was saying about being like the sleep warrior and how like we glorify the sleep warrior. And I feel like the opposite is true too. Like people who sleep too much, we think that they're lazy. So like to take a nap in the middle of the day, I think one reason why I don't is because I feel like people would think I was lazy, you know? It's an interesting thing how we say people who don't sleep enough are like admired, and people who probably sleep adequately, we think that they're lazy, or we kind of, there's kind of a looking down on that, I think.
Yeah, I think that's true. So Stephen actually sleeps, he's not a morning person, and he'll sleep till, I mean, he'll wake up any time between 7 and 9, I would say. But I'm always jealous. Like, he used to go to bed later, but now he'll go to bed when I go to bed. And but I'm always just jealous by how much he can sleep. And, you know, so he's definitely not lazy, but he definitely gets more sleep than me.
The interesting thing is also that, like, if my depression is flaring up, I will sleep for longer hours, and it's almost not even in my control. It's like my brain is a little bit, like, I guess it feels that it needs more sleep, or it's sleeping more to sort of avoid dealing with the world. And so it's interesting too, you know, how toxic that narrative is, that sleeping being equated with laziness is not just something that maybe prevents people from taking restorative naps, but also then sort of has this stigma against people who sleep more because maybe they have depression or chronic fatigue syndrome or any number of things that they could be dealing with. Or when my chronic pain flares up, I also sleep a lot more. But I actually swear by the 22-minute nap. The REM cycle is a little bit different for everyone, but for me, 22 minutes is the sweet spot, and I feel like I've gotten it down to an art form where did either of you ever read Graceling?
Oh yes, loved it.
You know how Katza can like just fall asleep and then just wake up, like it's like one of her powers that she has control over her sleep. I feel like that's how, like, I can't do this with my sleep at night, but that's how my nap practice is, where I'm like, okay, time to nap, and I put myself down on the couch and immediately pass out, and then 22 minutes later my alarm goes off, or sometimes I will wake up just before my alarm goes off, and it feels better than like an espresso.
Wow.
It, like, nothing gives me the same immediate surge of energy.
Wow, that's great. Oh, now you've talked me into maybe trying more naps now. Though I did want to touch a little bit of how you were saying, like, when your depression flares up, and like how maybe sometimes you might use sleep as a way to avoid. And that's actually something that I've heard from various friends, that like, actually writer friends, is like, they're like, oh, I'm too tired to write, and then they go to sleep and they realize, oh, it wasn't that I was too tired to write, I was using sleep as a way of avoiding writing or avoiding things that they need to do. And it's interesting how sleep has so many layers, and it kind of reminded me of so listeners know that my first husband, Robert, died of cancer. And I remember when we got the news that his cancer had returned, and it was, you know, there was probably not going to be a happy ending. I remember the first thing we did when we came back from the doctor's appointment is we just both crawled into bed and we went to sleep, like just trying to pretend like it would go away, and how it's also such a crutch for avoidance, you know? So it's an interesting thing, sleep.
Yeah, it's like wanting to be in oblivion, mm-hmm. in a way.
I think it's also kind of maybe like the brain's way of being like, you're safe when you're sleeping, so crawl into this safe space,
mm-hmm. yeah.
so that you can process, you know, that grief and all the complicated feelings around it in this safe space for a little while.
Yeah.
That's nice. Well, nice.
Well, and I think nice. That's why it's so, I think that's why it's so heartbreaking that it's so misunderstood. Like, if people are using sleep as a way to heal, or even as avoidance, as a cry for help in some ways, like, instead we can't see it that way. Instead, we call it laziness, you know?
Fortune cookies.
And now for our fortune cookie segment, we thought we would each recommend some of our favorite good night books. Emily, why don't you start?
So this question is hilarious to me because I'm not sure that anything I read is particularly soothing or directed towards, you know, the good night, the sleeping sentiment. But I do, in effort to calm down my brain, I will read poetry before bed. So I thought I would mention a couple poetry books that I love. I love anything by Hafiz of Shiraz. I have an entire collection of Hafiz poems. I also love Autobiography of Red by Anne Carson, which is a novel in verse. And since we're talking about books, I also just want to shout out a book that is coming out very soon by Kelly Lloyd Gilbert called When We Were Infinite. Mm-hmm. And it's just beautifully written. It's about friendship. It's about how, you know, it's as you're coming of age and you're evolving and becoming your own person and how friendship dynamics change and how we begin to understand the complexities of each other's families and how different and devastating things can be as you begin to realize what the people closest to you might be suffering from. It's about first love, and it's about music. I am a musician, so it's very dear to me because it very much captures my feelings of being a young musician.
That sounds great. When is that out, coming out, do you know?
It is, it comes out March 9th.
Oh, great. Look forward to that.
So in a month.
So let's see. I was trying to think about the goodnight books that I recommend. And I was thinking about the ones that that Hazel and I read when she was younger and the ones we're reading now. Like right now, at night, we are reading the Oz books. I think I might have mentioned it earlier. We just finished Ozma of Oz, and she loved it because I completely forgot, but there's a chicken that saves the day in it, and she's like, oh my gosh, we have to, she's like, the next chicken we get, we have to name the chicken Belina, because that's the chicken that saves the day in Ozma of Oz, so when we get our new chicken, if we get a new chicken, we will be naming it Belina, but so we've been reading those books, and those have been really great, but when she was younger, there were certain like goodnight books that were like just so kind of like bring her down and calm her down. And I remember Goodnight Gorilla, she really loved, by Peggy Rathman. And I remember we used to do this thing where in Goodnight Gorilla, like the zookeeper thinks he locked all the animals into the cages, but the gorilla steals the key and they all sneak in behind him and join him in his bedroom at night. And then he like turns off the light and he says, good night. And then all the animals one by one say, good night, good night, good night, good night, good night.
I love that book. That's a great
and then
one.
There's like this picture with the eyes are like, huh? And I remember we were like, good night, good night, good night. And then there's no words in the book, but we would always be like, what? Why are there so many good nights? Like, so like even now she'll say like, what? Why are there so many good nights? Because we remember that so vividly from when she was a kid. I mean, when she was really young, like when she was a toddler. And the other really lovely night book that that maybe I might have loved a little bit more than her, but was The Night World by Mordecai Gerstein. I just think that was so beautiful. He was such a really lovely man. He died fairly recently, and he was the gold winner for The Man That Walked Between Two Towers, and that was a beautiful book, but I actually think The Night World was even more beautiful, in my personal opinion. Anyway, how about you, Alvina?
Well, you mentioned The Night World, which is actually a book that I had edited. And I'm going to take this opportunity to name three other books that I've edited. the first is The Sound of Silence by Katrina Goldsaito, illustrated by Julia Kuo. And it's a picture book about a little boy who lives in Tokyo who is told that his neighbor's favorite sound was the sound of silence. So he goes on a journey to try to find silence in Tokyo, which is very difficult. But it's just a really beautiful meditative book. And then the book Bear Came Along by Richard T. Morris, illustrated by Lawen Pham. And this one won a Caldecott Honor last year. And it's, you know, a book about animals and community and coming together and just being all together on a journey. And then, of course, last but not least, I want to mention Where the Mountain Meets the Moon by someone named Grace Lynn. It really is a really great chapter. I mean, it's not really a chapter book. It's middle grade. But, you know, the way you wrote it with such short chapters, I think is perfect for, you know, like to just read a chapter or two, you know, before bed with your child or yourself.
Yeah.
I think it's a great bedtime book.
But I agree. I think it's like finding those books that you can read at night that that are like, you don't, for a night book, you don't want anything too, honestly, too like gut-wrenching.
Right, right.
But at nighttime, you just want like a little fun book.
Like an adventure story.
Yeah, an adventure story.
But maybe
story.
Not too exciting. But I think what's great about Where the Mountain Meets the Moon is, you know, if you finish one chapter, I think the chapters are short enough where if they're like, one more, you know, you can go and read two or three chapters.
I guess what it is, it's like the books where even when it's exciting, you kind of know nothing really bad is going to happen. You know, mm-hmm. like, and yeah. I think those are like the books that you read at
they're
night
comforting.
With your kids. Yeah.
And also, I don't know why I hadn't been thinking about picture books, but also to shout out another Grace book, I think A Big Mooncake for Little Star a beautiful book to read as a good night book. I love picture books that have this dream-like quality to them where the story's very simple and it's kind of more of a meditative experience. And I feel like that is exactly perfect for soothing the brain, calming down, and you know, entering that dream state.
Aww. I agree.
Thank you.
And now we'll end, as we always do, with what we're grateful for. Emily, why don't you start us off? What are you grateful for?
I am grateful for a nice, warm apartment that looks out at snow that I do not have to shovel.
That is great. Grace, what are you grateful for?
You know what? This week is going to be extremely busy for me for school visits. On Wednesday, I have a school visit that starts at 9, and then I have so many visits that like it ends at like 8:30, because the thing about virtual visits is that it can be like from all different schools and all different time zones and things. So like I have actually like 6 visits on Wednesday. This week is very hectic because I think because it's Lunar New Year and a lot of schools were like, oh, Graceland, will you come and do a virtual visit for Lunar New Year? And I'm really excited about that. I mean, I like last week or even the week before, I was like, oh, it's so hard because like now like one of my income streams is gone. And like here I am with all these school visits next week. So I'm very, very grateful for it. Anyway, Alvina, what are you grateful for?
Well, I am grateful for actually getting a really good night of sleep last night. I think I slept almost 8 hours. And I mentioned in the last episode that I had gotten a new mattress topper. I don't think the mattress topper is magic necessarily, but I do think it helps just to be really comfortable. We also got these new wonderful sheets from a company called Sheets and Giggles, which is a great name for a sheet company. And just reading a really good book before bed, which maybe we'll talk about on a future podcast because it's not out yet. But I'm very grateful for that. And that was our sleep episode. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to Hachette Audio, Little Brown Books for Young Readers, and Alex at Pacey Work Studio for producing and editing this podcast. You can find me at Planet Alvina on Twitter and at Alvina Ling on Instagram. Emily, where can people find you?
My social media handle is the same across all platforms. It is EXRPAN. I'm primarily on Twitter and Instagram, but I'm just now starting to dip a toe into the scary waters of TikTok.
Ooh.
Well, I am at Pacey Lynn on Twitter and on Instagram. And we love hearing feedback, so keep tagging and messaging us on social media using the hashtag BookFriendsForever, or send us a message via our website, BookFriendsForever.com. You can also see more detailed show notes there.
And if you have any suggestions for future topics to cover, please let us know. And of course, please remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you like this podcast, please tell a friend about it.
And please, please, please join our Patreon. We'd so appreciate it. The link is in the show notes.
I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lynn.
And I'm Emily XR Pan.
Have a great week.
And don't forget to read!